And with those familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live Sunday. Yes, my name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, August 9th, 2026, a hot one here in the Northeast United States. Shout out to air conditioning. If you're listening to the show on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network via their app, iHeart, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Tout, Hijack Zoom Call, Microsoft Teams call, that's a thing, right? YouTube. I thank you for checking in on this very warm Sunday. A special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. I'm going to be with you for the next hour, or if you're listening on WrestlingObserver.com, the next 36-ish minutes. There's a lot to talk about per usual. We're going to talk about AEW Collision from Saturday Night Live. The road to All In continues with the kickoff of the Continental Cup. Brand new tournament is launched. And we'll talk about all the action from that. The show, of course, we'll look ahead to this Wednesday and some of the new announcements and what we're going to see this Wednesday from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Repercussions or some, there's repercussions for All In, the card. So we'll chat about that. We'll also talk about shame. Why is everyone so ashamed of achievements in pro wrestling? A couple things caught my eye this past week, both from the TKO call and also a thought I had while walking about the upcoming All In. Talk about some of the more inane conversations that were happening on social this week, as they always do, like Roman Reigns and such. We'll talk about Grand Slam Mexico a little bit and some of the key learnings. And one of the reasons I love these theme shows and... yeah, a bunch of other stuff as well. Tons to talk about. I can't wait to start. So after the break, more Wrestling Observer Live Sunday with Josh Nason. So stick around. We'll be right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason is back Sunday, August 9th. Hope you're doing well. Let's get into a lot in this segment. Let's go into AEW Collision to start with. And yeah, last night was entertaining in-ring, as always. Three Continental Challenge Cup matches. And I think if you watch this broadcast, Paul White said, I think he said the Continental Cup at one point, or he said what did he say? Basically, Tony Schiavone kept saying one thing and Paul White kept saying another thing. And I think one said the Continental Classic Challenge. That's what Paul White said. And then it was the Continental Challenge Cup. Somehow along in the last week, along the way, they updated this to the Continental Challenge Cup. And if you listen to watch these matches, everyone is like struggling to say Continental Challenge Cup. Just go back to the Continental Cup tournament or something like that. You know what I mean? Just make it easy, because this is just alliteration gone wild. But yeah, three solid matches. Eddie Kingston winning in the main event over Jake Doyle. We had Orange Cassidy defeating Matt Sydal. And the show opener, had Claudio Castagnoli against Ace Austin. And yeah, all three guys doing well. A lot of conjecture about how Eddie Kingston looked physically and so on. He has not really been on AEW TV a lot of Ring of Honor. But honestly, like, there's some guys that it goes back to everything. Like, the look of a pro wrestler and this group versus this group and this group and Cosmex and all that. These fans love Eddie Kingston. So you got to play into that, right? And as long as he's okay and out there and able to go and kind of just getting back into it, I don't know. It's hard to, the fans have such a connection with him that to not have him on TV because of cosmetics, I don't think that's what's happening, but just something to kind of watch. But that was some conjecture, of course, going on Saturday after the show. Tony Schiavone, one thing I noted, he said he loves the Continental title rules because there's no interference in matches. It's like, shouldn't that be the case in every single match? The whole point is no interference, because it's 1-on-1 or 2-on-2, whatever. That it's funny that just the way he said, I'm like, well, it basically is saying that every other match, I mean, interference is just part of it. Just that's what's going to happen. So I thought that was kind of funny. Note on Ace Austin, also Myron Reed. So Myron Reed had a really fun match with Mike Bailey. Just an embarrassment of riches in terms of in-ring, the in-ring talent the AEW has. And I'm not saying anything you don't know. But it's like, I wrote down a note, like you could flip Myron Reed and Mike Bailey, and in terms of where they are kind of in their career and getting shots against Kyle Fletcher and so on and so forth, and it would be seamless. Guys like Myron Reed and Ace Austin, they have it. Like, they have that in-ring talent. Myron Reed is someone that I saw in the Indies a long time ago, and this is when he, I think it was in MLW at the time. He's one of these guys who just needs, like, an extended run. And someone would be like, we're going to, I would say, put the rocket on it. But, you know, I'm just really saying we're going to commit to him the same way that they, that, you know, Tony Khan has done with a Mike Bailey or, you know, Kyle Fletcher. Yeah, you know, is he going to be the Kyle Fletcher level? I don't know. But in terms of a really strong singles competitor that should be in the mix for, you know, a TNT title or something like that, Myron Reed's got it. Ace Austin has it. And it's one of the things when you have such a crowded roster, it's really, really hard to give these guys space and time. And that's the reason why shows like Collision exist. But these two guys, just watching last night, it's, yeah, they're really good. They're really good. And I hope they get some extended run sometime soon. AEW definitely leaning more into the cool entrances and the crowd interaction type stuff. I've noticed this both, of course, the Guns have done this forever. Also, the Dogs are doing this now. With the, you know, who let the dogs out and the hoo hoo hoo, you know, all that. That's instant crowd reaction stuff, but they're also heels. So that's kind of interesting. But now everyone seems to be a tweener. So I just noted that. And what else? They did a really nice Dory Funk tribute, Dory Funk Jr. tribute. I thought that was just, you know, Tony Schiavone is really good at these moments where he has this historical gravitas. He knew him, you know, he knew it. He worked with him, been there, done that, seen it. And he used a lot of still shots, and the fans clapped. And at the end, really nice. And it was just one of those simple kind of things for a guy that never worked for AEW, never appeared in AEW. I don't believe he's ever been in the crowd or anything like that when he was alive. But just a simple honoring of tradition and history. And I thought that was just a really kind of cool moment. I'm wondering, speaking of the Dogs and the Death Riders, we haven't heard much about Blood and Guts. No big surprise, because we have AEW All In coming, and all eyes are focused on that. But last year was in November, and it just feels like we're building towards the Dogs and Death Riders versus Bang Bang Gang Blood and Guts match in the fall, doesn't it? Makes sense. Two big factions going at it. Something that with these Blood and Guts matches, you want them to, the storyline kind of it transitions into it, not a forced thing like WWE used to do with Hell in the Cell, right? And they seem to have figured that out. That seems to be the direction, and that should be when it does happen. You have to hit it at the right peak. Obviously, are they going to wait till November? Can we keep this feud going for 3 months, 4 months? We'll see. Hurt Syndicate made an appearance backstage. Now they're doing an alliance with Shane Taylor Promotions. All right, boy, the Hurt Syndicate, man. I don't know. And you know why I'm saying I don't know. This is one of those, Tony Khan will never release people at all. I just don't think they fit anymore. They were a super hot act in this company and people were into them. And then there was the stories that came out about not wanting to job or give certain people, take offense of certain people. MVP said as much in an interview, you know, saying that, you know, Bobby Lashley's the Black Brock Lesnar, and just these guys shouldn't be selling for people that are smaller than them and so on. And a lot of the company is smaller than them. These guys are big, and it's a shame because Shelton, I really want to see Shelton Benjamin against Kenny Omega before it's all said and done. I just think that's such an athletically fun matchup you could main event a Dynamite with. First time ever. I just, one of those I kind of need to see, but I don't know if we'll ever see that, but we'll see where this goes. Some sort of, yeah, alliance, and yeah, the Hurt Syndicate. Yeah. I don't think they've been on AEW TV since the last, actually, I think they appeared in a Collision and said they're kind of doing stuff for money now. And it's kind of one of those things that we got to do something with them. So what do we do? So yeah. So that was Collision last night. AEW, of course, we have MJF versus Mike Bailey and Nick Wayne coming up this Wednesday. We have Chris Jericho taking on Kevin Knight for the TNT title. How about that? That'll be a match coming up this Wednesday. And of course, we all expect that Kevin Knight will defend against Darby Allin. There was a challenge made on the show. Kevin Knight kind of blowing it off, so we'll see what happens. Will happen there. Before we get out of here for this this first segment, I got to hit on this AJ Styles, Avery Styles, Eric Cannon thing. Did you guys see this Saturday into Sunday? Where essentially Eric Cannon kind of saw a quote from Natty about Avery Styles, AJ's son, wanting to pay his dues and watching Thompson work the dungeon and so on and so forth. And Eric Cannon, who was at this GCW show in Minnesota that Avery Styles was on, taking on Marcus Mathers, essentially saying it's laughable. I can't remember what the exact language was, but it's laughable he did this. And then he and AJ kind of got into it a little bit on social. Essentially, Eric Cannon saying that Avery didn't offer to help do any ring teardown setup or chairs specifically. And then he's asked twice and just hid in the back and so on and so forth. And of course, and AJ saying, well, you know, he's hired to wrestle, to paraphrase. He's hired to wrestle, not to tear down and tear down the ring or do any, be on ring crew. That doesn't sound like his job. Sounds like your job. He said that to Eric. And of course, everyone that has never wrestled or worked for a promotion had to chime in. And now Avery Styles, at I think he's 19, is now having to go through the culture wars, the wrestling culture wars. I will say this: the best thing I can say on this is from Garrett Kidney, guy who was on my podcast before, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Wrestling really is addicted to making what should be normal private conversations into big public social media spectacles. Couldn't say any better than that. I am very much looking forward to what Lance Storm has to say about this with Brian Alvarez and Wrestling Observer Live coming up this week. And coming up next, we'll talk about why is everyone so ashamed of being successful in pro wrestling? What am I talking about? More about that coming after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Josh Nason, come right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason. It is Sunday, a very warm Sunday here. Again, in the Northeast United States. Probably get some relief this week. As you're listening to this, I am on my way home from Fenway Park. Yes, this episode of Wrestling Observer Live is not exactly live because I'm taking the family to a Boston Red Sox game for our annual trip down there. Can't really afford too many other ones, to be honest. But hey, that's what you do. And daughter's a huge fan. So hopefully as we're coming back, they have beaten the Sacramento Athletics from Fenway Park and could do this unbelievable winning streak and so on. And yeah, we'll be sweating it out in Boston. And yeah, hopefully good air conditioning and having a relaxing summer wherever you are. Again, if you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com, thank you so much. Of course, you listen to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts with separate subscriptions there if you choose, for free everywhere. WrestlingObserver.com. Great, some thanks. Things I think I know I think. Why is everyone so ashamed of success? And as I like to do, I take about a 2-mile walk almost every day, definitely every weekday. The weekends, you know, all depends. But, you know, I was thinking the other day, I was listening to Pollock and Thurston on WrestleNomics or postwrestling.com, WrestleNomics, whatever you want to call it. And they were talking about All In and tickets and things like that. And sometimes, you know, with ratings and, you know, certain attendance things that kind of fade out just a little bit in my head. I started thinking, and I remember last year for AEW All In, from Wembley Stadium. I think the second one, maybe the last couple. Last year was Texas. And the lack of announcing an attendance. And I thought about this past weekend's SummerSlam in Minneapolis. And they had, I can't remember what WrestleTix estimated, but I think it was around 30-something thousand, maybe 33, 34. Apologize if I don't know the number, but it's in the 30s for both nights. Didn't announce an attendance. That's a rare one, right? For WWE not to announce a stadium attendance. And then I was thinking about just, you know, there was the media call. The TKO financial call. I always struggle with what to call it. The financial call that happened this past week, and I listen in on that as I always do and do some stuff for the website, try and analyze numbers as best I can. I was listening to the call while watching my daughter's youth hockey practice. So, yeah, that's always fun typing those up. And I was listening to that, and they talked about, of course, WrestleMania, and one of the things that they mentioned was that the revenue for one of their categories, which was live events and hospitality, I believe, was down nearly solely to WrestleMania 42 ticket sales, which were down from the year before. But still, they did not mention. They mentioned on one of the portions of the call, it was still one of the highest gates they've ever had. But you wouldn't know it because they didn't say it was, I believe, the number three and number four of all time. And they didn't even bother saying that. Just one of the. Because it's, you can't be, if you're not the first or the second, if you're not going up, then it's not worth anyone's time. You have to avert eyes away from it. And it really hit me when I'm kind of thinking about all these things that it's really bad that what the industry has done from a fan tribalism perspective, from a media perspective, I guess, and otherwise that we're shaming these companies, no matter where, if you need to sit on one side of the aisle, these successes are being treated as like failures. They're not talking about them. Last year's WrestleMania was number three and number four, highest attendance or most biggest revenue nights of all time. They're not officially, but based on all the numbers, Brandon Thurston has put this out before and there's no reason to not believe it. And we're not celebrating that. WrestleMania put in probably, 60,000 fans over two nights at the US Bank Stadium or whatever it's called. And we're not celebrating that. Probably did a really good gate. Some reason that's like an embarrassment because they had to tarp off some sections and it wasn't 40,000 or 50,000. It's still over 30,000 people over two nights each night. AEW All In. They didn't announce, what the report was that Brandon had. I think it was over 24,000 that went through the turnstiles and probably distributed was more than that. And, say it was 25 total, that walked through the turnstiles. Somehow this is something that we're supposed to be like, oh my God. We can't tell anyone about this. And the Wembley, the second Wembley night that they did for All In, they didn't announce attendance. They did the first night. It was, the largest paid attendance of all time or something like that. And the next year was 50 some odd thousand, I think. And because it was such a big drop, we can't say anything about that. Why not? Not everything goes up to the right all the time. And this is the big thing with one of the big issues in our society is if your status quo, it's not good enough. Everything has to be up, up, up. And that's the reason one of the many reasons our economy is struggling right now. And this perception that unless you're going the hockey stick up and to the right, that you're a failure. These are huge numbers. Huge. For number one and number two promotion. And for some reason, we're like, oh, it's just awful. And this extends to other groups as well. But it's this thing of, if a TNA or, that's probably the best TNA, I was thinking New Japan, someone that put out, we did this and say it was a $50,000 gate or a 1.2, or, TNA would do a 1.2 million, but you know what I mean? Like, everything, it's relative to where you're at. And that's still success is success. But we've got to this point of, unless it's something that really blows you away and it's such a huge number and all this, it's treated as like an afterthought. It's crazy. So yeah, it's not going to stop anytime soon. I just wanted to point that out that for perspective, these numbers are good and these promotions should be okay and confident in their own abilities to say, this is good. And to be able to say, yeah, this is why. Yeah, we didn't do as much as last year, but these are probably some of the factors. We're not probably going to get a number for All In Wembley, but we should. Not everything's going to be up to the right. If we're in a point where wrestling's kind of softening up a little bit from this white hot streak it was on with WWE, a year ago, whatever, it's still really good. They've done $1 billion in revenue alone the first 6 months of the year. $1 billion in revenue just for WWE alone. That beat the UFC. A real sport. Keep that in mind. Things are fine. And it's okay to say that they are, no matter what promotion that you root for. But other things I think. I don't get too much into this. I fundamentally don't think that more people are watching Dynamite than Raw in the U.S. I don't. These numbers and ratings are so difficult to understand and figure out, a lot probably on purpose. We've lost another Nielsen, a conduit, so to speak, in the U.S. with a Programming Insider. I don't know if they were getting numbers from Nielsen or whatever, but somehow they were getting numbers, and that's what a lot of the industry was, wrestling industry, and I guess others as well, were kind of relying on. And they're gone again, I believe. So, like, the ring stuff, you see some of the discourse on our website is really kind of born out of this, and I don't know what you believe. I just fundamentally have a tough time believing that. Part of that is the attendance. And something I've talked about for a while is people love going to shows. It is concerts, live events, comedy, anything. And that includes wrestling. And we know the numbers for WWE in some markets are down. And I think it's a reflection of the economy. I think it's a reflection of how the interest level is for the shows and so on. I used to work in pro sports. I've said this a million times. And when people want to go see something, they will go see it. And I think I have a hard time. I know that some people believe that it's never translated over with wrestling, that even if you're super hot on TV, it doesn't necessarily translate over attendance. That doesn't really compute to me in 2026. And that people, if they want to go see it as an attraction, they want to go see it. And AEW, for some reason, is still not at the point where they're selling out, they're selling 3,000-4,000 seats on a regular basis for Dynamite or even Collision. Dynamite especially. It's just odd to me. It doesn't affect my viewing of the product. I just think it's strange that they don't have that conversion rate for to get people to go out and see them. Is it a case of just, again, a lack of announced card ahead of time? Is it just they just don't have the people that they want to see other than pay-per-views? It's just a weird anomaly. But I just have a really, based on that and the attendance and that those conversions, I just have a really hard time believing they routinely beat Raw domestically. I just don't. And it's not based on any agenda or anything like that. I just fundamentally, I just have a hard time believing it. I have more things on my list, but we're going to have to wait till next break. I will just chime in this Roman Reigns conversation. We'll talk about this a little bit more. It is crazy. A comment by a podcaster, and this is what happens. We are way too terminally online. We'll turn into this week-long complain fest about someone's opinion. Conrad Thompson, a famous podcaster, thinks that Roman Reigns, I believe the phrase, the most overrated main eventer of the modern day era. I believe I'll get the actual verbatim what we said, and we'll talk about that more after the break. That and more AW2, Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live Sunday, coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live Sunday. My name is Josh Nason. Thank you for stopping in. Let's get right back to the Roman Reigns conversation. We won't spend a ton of time on this, but just to kind of give you a sense of how much the pro wrestling industry is dominated by social media narratives and so on. Again, with no real mainstream coverage, this is kind of what this is our version of it, I guess. So the other day, Conrad Thompson, and I don't really have the full context, but he was talking to Eric Bischoff on 83 Weeks, and he had what he called the hot take. They knew what set people. This verbatim comes from Cage Side Seats. I think Roman Reigns is probably the most overrated main eventer in WWE history. He said he continued calling Reigns an industry plant, a term in the music business used to describe someone whose success is perceived as being manufactured and backed by influential connections such as family ties to the industry. Despite his placement as a top guy, Thompson believes WWE's fortunes wouldn't change if a second-generation star were suddenly go away. He accused Reigns of not putting in the same work as Cody Rhodes or John Cena, despite Reigns having done so earlier. Having done so years earlier, he just flies in, takes 12 minutes to get to the ring. Russell's kind of the same match, just really slow, gets his hand raised, and he moves on. He's Goldberg if Goldberg worked more than 10 minutes. He described the current Bloodline storyline to NWO. Appeared main, including Bischoff, who led Bischoff, believe it dragged on far too long, and so on and so forth. So it's kind of an interesting thought, right? And part of this is the transition over the last 10 plus years, probably more, in that and this has been in the UFC as well, is that the organization is more important than the individual. And it's been a big shift by those that run it. The reason that they've done that is because when you make the organization more the draw versus the individual, you can control pay. I can make a star out of anyone. I can bring people in. I can get people. So yeah, you want a big push? I'm just going to push someone else. I'd be happy to take the spot. You want to sit out for a year and not defend your title, say in the UFC, you want to, whatever? I'll make other stars. I'll just move on without you. I'll create an interim title and I'll be fine. Because people like the brand. The brand means X. This is what they're coming for, not you. Now, that's also kind of a crazy thought when you're trying to promote individuals in a cage or a ring or what have you. Fundamentally, you and I can say this is the dumbest thing I've heard. And some stars are just transcendent. That no matter what, they're going to rise above and be like, I want to see that person. Conor McGregor is a perfect example. And that's why I don't think he's going to re-sign with the UFC once this deal's done. And partially because I don't think they have any interest in re-signing him after this final deal is done. Final fight next year. Assuming it happens. But with Roman Reigns, you know, this was a time where, I mean, he's been on top for so long. It is kind of interesting, you know, the most interesting he's been, I think, is this, you know, this Bloodline kind of version and the just like the AEW Four Pillars thing, I think was just the worst thing to be said, or a real detriment to AEW booking and kind of how people perceive certain wrestlers there. I think when Paul Heyman said that he used the 9 innings comparison with the Bloodline, that denotes a set start and an end. And, you know, when I think at one point he's like, I think we're halfway through the fourth or midway through the fourth or something like this. That just, some people that aren't really into it, it kind of is like, oh man, how much more of this do we have? The Bloodline thing is really kind of past its expiration date to me at this point. I don't find it that interesting. Reigns himself, I've never really kind of found that interesting. There are certain points during this the height of this Bloodline run, which I thought were more intriguing than others. But yeah, he can come out and he can stand there and get a huge reaction. That means something to somebody. People aren't just complacent sitting on their hands. He is a different type of animal. Now, is he a make-a-wish star like a John Cena? I don't think so, or else we'd hear about it. Does he do stuff for charity? Does he do things like that? Maybe not. I don't really know. You know, he seems to kind of want to, again, go in the acting thing. I don't really see it, although I didn't see the Cena thing coming as well. I think Cena is more goofy and willing to kind of laugh at himself. I don't really get that from Reigns. And I think it's because we don't really know a lot about him either. That one Vanity Fair piece that came out a couple of years ago, I think the only thing people remember that is that he said he voted for Donald Trump. And he did it kind of in a real vague way, right? That's the only thing people remember. Like, we know he has kids at home. He was concerned during the pandemic about working because they're young twins and he didn't want to potentially bring something home to them. But we don't really know much about him. And like, kind of like, you know, like the things that really kind of go whole and make him whole in terms of like, oh, I'm really into this person. Does new podcast interviews, right? He's just not really out there. And I think that's also, you know, kind of what Conrad was saying in a way. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. Anyone in that same position, the WWE is so hot. You know, the most overrated, I don't know. People seem to be really into him. I think it's one of these things where you'd have to really spend some time looking at all this and committing the time. But I mean, as a hot take, Brother, that's a hot take. That's a hot take for a hot time of year. Let's go to some AEW stuff here. And I, one of the things I was thinking about Wednesday after that show, Grand Slam Mexico, I really like how AEW does themed episodes, you know, 10 times a year or so. They have Grand Slam Mexico, which is its own theme, which is a different place, a different venue. And it just looks cool and different. Their second one they did at Arena Mexico. And it just has that. It's fun. I don't watch CMLL, but I think it's really cool that they go there because it's a different look, a different vibe. And it's, you know, so much of it is the AEW product there. You'd like to see a little bit more CMLL, but I guess they're also kind of figuring, well, maybe our main audience doesn't know as much as them. So really kind of the CMLL contribution is a couple matches, Mystico, a Hechicero or so on. And really the venue is kind of the tie-in. But they do things like Beach Break and the Fright Night Dynamite. And, you know, just things where it's like, you know, it's a show, but it's a little bit different. Even though it may not be that different, other than just maybe slightly change with a theme or maybe kind of some related matches around a theme or something like that. I just was thinking, I really like how they do that. You know, they do the Maximum Carnage episodes of Dynamite in January, and there's no Maximum Carnage tie-in or, you know, nothing that's a product or anything like that. But I like how they try and they're doing those type of things. And Grand Slam was another case of that. Fun show. And then, of course, it does not translate over to Collision like it did last night, but that's okay. Some of the other ones do. The conjecture, so I mean, a bet of all bets in terms of if you want to make money, and I don't know, I'm not a prediction market guy like as a Kelsey and Poly Market. I don't know. I assume you can bet pro wrestling on there or predict. I wonder, I assume one of the options was would AEW Dynamite have an overrun for this episode? That would be the easiest money you could make. 2.5 hour listed runtime. You knew he was with 8 matches on that show. There was 0.0% chance he was going to cut it off at 2 hours 30 minutes. It was fine. In this case, it was. The show flowed, and I honestly was not like, oh my God, I can't wait for this show to be over. You know, the Dynamite the week before did a 34-minute overrun. I was kind of like, I was a little worn out by the end of it, coming off of Redemption. But as this talk about, you know, the shows and length and all that, I talked about this a lot last week. I won't get into it again. I will say now, it's funny that you see on social, it's this kind of like... AEW defense. So now anytime a show goes over, people have to mock those that say, well, you know, the shows are too long. Now it's just like, oh my God, I have to watch all these shows. It's so terrible. And just like, okay, it's okay to disagree and have opinions on things and not be like, well, it has to be one way or the other. With SummerSlam last weekend, they had the, you know, shorter shows, but the action wasn't there. But it's like, it's either that approach or we're just going to give you more than you ever could want. There's no middle ground. That to me is crazy. I thought the Ospreay Davis match was entertaining at the end. I also thought it was, I think, unnecessarily dangerous for considering one of your main eventers. If something happened to him, Will Ospreay, I mean, what do you do at that point? But that's just the risk these guys take. But I was just like, wow, okay. I jotted this down before any of the conjecture came up because I was I didn't know if it was going to be a common thing of not only do you have a match but you have a violent match like this where we're just tempting the gods with something going wrong for this major event they're having later this month at All In. And one last thing about Davis and Ospreay, it's okay that they had no interference for a street fight. Why? Because Mark Davis asked for it. That's how badly he wanted to fight Will Ospreay. We'll check that box off with one of the crazier and more inane debates of the week. Let's, real quick, coming up on the break, the WWE released the bracket, speaking of Roman Reigns, for their Mexico City title shot tournament. Initially, our Brian Alvarez report, the talk was that El Grande Americano was going to win this thing and face him in Mexico City. However, not to be the case. We have Penta and Laredo Kid, Psycho Clown and La Parca, Dragon Lee and El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr., and Ray Phoenix versus El Fiscal. So he's not even in the tournament. These will all be on Raw, these qualifying matches or these first round matches, with the exception of Psycho Clown and La Parca. So I think it's going to be Penta, right? My assumption is it's going to be Penta versus Dragon Lee or Penta versus Phoenix in the finals, simply because these are main roster guys. And for some reason, AAA is treated as they exist, but they exist kind of when they want to. So, yeah, Penta, he's coming off that Intercontinental title loss. And I think this would be kind of we're giving him this big opportunity against Roman Reigns. That's a first time ever match. I mean, I wouldn't hate a Ray Phoenix Roman Reigns match just because it'll never happen. But this is kind of a thing where, like, you want to elevate a guy. That would be such a weird change of styles. Actually, I just said Penta versus Ray Phoenix in the finals. That'd be brother versus brother. That would be really fun. So maybe it's going to be Penta against Dragon Lee, because I don't know if they want to go there just yet, because they have to explain all the lore and background. I don't think they really want to do that. But it's possible. Stranger things have happened. But yeah, I think Roman Reigns against Penta, based on this lineup, is the call. Why isn't Grande Americano in this? So weird. So weird. But that's how things go. And yeah, other notes of the week, Dory Funk Jr. passed away. Tons of stuff on our website about that. We have WWE is going to be holding the first ever Raw in Ireland. So not a PLE, as had been speculated. The massive news is going to be they're going to hold the first ever episode of Raw. That's happening in late January. So we'll see what happens there. So, and yeah, this is, kind of like, I guess. I mean, that thing will sell out pretty quick, but you're kind of hoping for a PLA. Maybe this is a test run. Who knows? When we come back, we'll look at the week ahead, quick preview, and we'll get out of here. Wrestling Observer Live, Josh Nason, back after this. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason, wrapping up a Sunday. If you missed any of the show, you can check it out, WrestlingObserver.com, and any Spotify, Apple Podcasts, various apps, and so on and so forth. If you're listening on Sports Byline, you can go there and check that out. And again, thank you for everyone for tuning in, no matter where you are in the world. Hopefully my preview for this week includes going to see The Odyssey, which for some reason is disappeared out of theaters in my area in New Hampshire and Maine starting this Thursday as I'm recording this right now. Like, not even in regular theaters. I understand the IMAX thing, but like normal screenings. I don't get it. It seems very, very strange. So we'll see. Okay, so coming up this week, we have, of course, Raw on Monday, NXT on Tuesday, and AEW Dynamite on Wednesday. The continued push here for All In. I forgot what show I was talking about, because they're doing a collision taping afterwards. This is in Las Vegas. So you'll be able to get spoilers on our site, I would assume, shortly after the show, or if you want to skip them all together. That show, again, will air on Saturday, per normal. We'll have a TNA Impact coming up, Ring of Honor on Thursday, SmackDown on Friday, the G1 starting its slow descent toward the end this week, and of course, Collision, as I mentioned, tape show, and then AAA on Saturday. My schedule this week also include going to a Chris Stapleton show on Friday, and Mumford & Sons on Saturday, my wife's two favorite acts back-to-back, two different cities. So we're going to be doing that, kind of wrap up summer here. But yeah, a lot of stuff to talk about here. And of course, next Sunday, I will be here. Tired from all these concerts and hopefully some Odysseying. We'll see. And hopefully some Spider-Man Brand New Day. Got a lot of things to watch, wrestling included. We'll talk about it all more next week. Again, thank you so much for joining me this week. Thank you for joining me in the weeks ahead. And we'll call it a wrap. This has been Josh Nason, and this has been Wrestling Observer Live Sunday. Thanks so much for stopping by.